You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
You're listening to the Pennsylvania Woodsman, powered by Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network.
This show is driven to provide relatable hunting and outdoor content in the Keystone State and surrounding Northeast.
On this show, you'll hear an array of perspectives from biologists and industry professionals
to average Joes with a lifetime of knowledge.
All centered around values aiming to be better outdoorsmen and women,
both in the field as well as home and daily life.
No clicks, no self-interest. Just the light in the pursuit of creation.
And now, your host,
the pride of Pennsylvania,
the man who shoots straight and won't steer you wrong,
Johnny Appleseed himself,
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to another episode. Glad you're here with us here this week. And this week, I have a really fun episode lined up here. You guys know, if you've listened to this show long enough, that I'm definitely geared towards deer hunting in the fall and, you know, fall-oriented things. But as I said, you know, last week, really starting to get bird brain and thinking about turkeys here. I am going, when this airs, I will be a day away from heading down to Maryland for 3 days. This is going to be the first time I've ever hunted in Maryland. Got the brilliant idea. I had some time that I could take for work, and it aligned with the family schedule, and decided I just wanted to get a jump start on turkey season. I don't really have high expectations. I'm going to a chunk of public land and going to explore and just have fun. Just enjoy being out in the woods, hoping to hear some turkeys. If I kill one, it's a bonus. I'm going with a good friend of mine and going to make the most of it. I never really got into the turkey guns. It's funny. I started this story last week, and then I went on another tangent about something turkey hunting related. But I started off that I turkey hunted with the bow for a very long time, and just got to a point I wanted to go back and do some more hunting with the shotgun. And I have two 870 Remington shotguns. One is a 12-gauge. It's a pretty short gun. And then I have a 20-gauge longer gun, and I've shot turkeys with both my 12-gauges, and I told the story of the bird I shot with my great-grandfather's model 12-gauge, and then I turned my short 870 into a turkey gun and killed a few birds with that. And I'm looking at the guns that I have in my case and realizing that since I bought my 20-gauge 870, I've literally never taken it out of the case. I've never found a reason to go hunting with it. I haven't small game hunted with it like I thought I would. And I haven't found a reason to take the 20-gauge out other than, you know, coming up with one. So I decided, you know what? I want to kill a turkey with this gun. And I know a lot of guys are switching over to 20 gauges for their full-time turkey gun. They're shooting TSS and all these different setups, and they're claiming they're just as good, if not better, than a 12-gauge. And they could easily be right. I'm just new. I'm not used to all the nuances with a 20-gauge, and I'm still a little skeptical. So I decided, because I went cheap with my choke tube the first year, I got a real cheap extra folk choke tube. I bought a couple different turkey loads for the 20 gauge and tried patterning them. And then I liked it, but I thought, you know what, just for that extra reassurance on a distance shot, because I'm thinking, man, I'm really going to be stretching myself with this 20 gauge. I'm going to try a turkey scope. I always like the idea of having, you know, a circle reticle and, you know, a low magnification scope and just giving it a try. I don't know if I'm going to like it or not, but I put that on this 20 gauge and found that some TSS number 9s were the best one with the combination that I picked so far. So that's what I'm going to run. I'm going to take that to Maryland and who knows, probably continue it into the Pennsylvania season. But nevertheless, looking forward to it. I'm running, I've talked about them a little bit before, and I want to talk about them again real quick. I've been running a friend of mine's custom-made mouth turkey calls. Jason Miller had him on the podcast last year. Good chance I'll have him on again in the future. Really good turkey hunter, but really passionate hunter. And, you know, he's a hard-working blue-collar guy that just loves to turkey hunt and share hunting experiences and talk with people, and started making his own mouth calls. And he showed me the process he goes through now, and he showed me the evolution of this like cheap little setup that he had, and how he started it to like the major upgrade that he has. And like, he can pump turkey calls out now, and he's got it down to a system, and he has his quality checks in of how he, you know, how often he checks and, you know, which calls he wants to make what sounds, and, you know, make so many calls, and then, you know, the 50th one or whatever, put it in his mouth and just check, make sure that sound is still the way he wants it. And he gave me a couple, I got a few more. I've got an arsenal of these mouth calls, and I'm thrilled with them. I love using them. And I know a lot of guys in the southeastern part of the state have taken them into the woods and had success with them. And I'm telling you that you should check them out. It's Jay Miller Custom Calls. Check it out on Facebook or Instagram. Send him a message, and he'll make sure that he gets you set up with what you like, and try them out this year. I know he. I just got a message from him this morning. He's down in New Jersey turkey hunting. He killed the bird this week, Monday morning. Thrilled for him, and I'm sure he's got plenty more up his sleeve for the rest of this spring. You know, continuing on with the turkey hunting, we got a guest back. I had him on a few weeks ago, and I wanted to have him back because I feel like we barely scratched the surface of his hunting season last year. That's Jason Go, Final Stand YouTube channel. Jason, you know, was on a few weeks ago talking about his Maryland seek a deer hunting excursions, and, you know, been pretty successful doing that. But he also had an absolutely phenomenal hunting season. In fact, to give you a little snapshot of what that looks like, he already has his triple trophy in his possession for 2023-2024. He's going for a grand slam in Pennsylvania to fill his spring gobbler tag, and we're going to break down his season. We're going to talk little tidbits of each portion of his season, from the success that he had whitetail deer hunting in Maryland to his fantastic mountain buck that he killed. We're going to talk about the story. There's a little bit of strategy in the location that he taught, and we dive into that strategy of that location in which he harvested that buck. We tell the story of his 20 plus year excursion to finally kill his first black bear in Pennsylvania, and, you know, kills a fall turkey. And that, of course, what you've noticed with me, and you'll notice with Jason, is you start talking about turkeys, it doesn't bring out the strategies as much as it does the fellowship and the stories, and we bounce that off. And we talk a little bit about leading into spring gobbler season, where he's going, what he's planning on doing, and just out there to have fun. He's of course, hoping to fill that tag, but Jason's somebody that really enjoys the process and hunting. And I do believe that he's going to take this season away as a complete success, regardless of filling that spring gobbler tag, even though I'm pretty confident he will. So let's let it at that. Great episode. Glad to have him. Glad to have him back. Hope you enjoy it. Before we get to it, Radix hunting. Guys, get a Monarch G1 ground blind if you need a ground blind update. It is a traditional hub style blind. Really cool camo pattern, but I love the windows. I love the placement. There's a lot of just a lot of simple things that I think are step above a lot of other ground blinds I've been in. It's a lot easier for bow shots, and of course it's simple for hunting out of it with a gun. Anything Radix hunting, cell cameras, M-Cores, I talk about those constantly. I've run those, had really good luck using that Scout Tech app. You can get Gen 600s, traditional cameras. There's also a ton of other offerings by Radix hunting from, like I said, the blinds, tree stands, feeders, cameras, stick and pick camera accessories. Go to RadixHunting.com. Check out all the things that you might need for this upcoming season. Let's get to this episode with Jason Goh. So back for round two, Jason Goh. Thanks for joining us again. How you been, buddy?
Good. How are you today?
Hey, I am. I was getting set up for the episode I have this coming week here. I was recording my intro, and as I was talking about stuff with Turkey, I was like, I'm majorly on bird brain right now. Like, I can't. It's this weird thing because bird brain for me, and it only happens a very short amount of time of the year. Because any other time of the year, I'm thinking about deer hunting or bear hunting in the fall, and even throughout the winter. Like, I remember when I was a kid, I used to flip a switch like once flintlock muzzleloader season closed, and I was starting to think about spring turkeys, and cabin fever was a big deal to me. Now that doesn't happen, but it's like 2-3 weeks before turkey season happens, I'm thinking bird brain, and I'm actually like looking at my shotgun. I'm thinking about doing some equipment upgrades. I'm getting weird.
Oh yeah, I'm kind of the same way. I usually, when I first started turkey hunting, I got into, like, I was really excited about it. So like Marchish, I would start getting like all jazzed up about it. But anymore, it seems like I don't really. When I scout for turkeys, it's kind of a waste of time for me a lot of times till actually the end of April. So once I kind of feel like it's that time of year, usually around the start of trout season in Pennsylvania here is when I kind of really start ramping up. And that's when, same idea. Like, I just start thinking turkeys, playing with my calls. And I mean, I shoot at TSS. So, you know, burning $15 shells is great, you know, whatever they cost anymore, but, to pattern my gun, but just to double check things.
Yeah, I know what you mean, and it's all part of the game, right? Turkeys, so I don't know if it's because whitetails are the number one species in North America that people get so year-round focused, or what it is, if there's just more information out there or what, but it definitely seems like other big game species, and when I say other big game species, I'm talking relative to Pennsylvania, so you really only got three other options, and I don't even include elk. So when it comes to like deer, bear, and turkeys, I'm not thinking about the preparations of spring turkey hunting and the preparations of fall black bear hunting until it's getting close. I feel like most recent information in those two species are way more important to me than like the year-round process that I go through with whitetails. Do you feel the same way?
I agree. And I mean, every time I'm in the woods, be it turkey or bear hunting, I'm still scouting deer. You know what I mean? So even when I'm in that mode of those seasons, deer is still in the back of my mind as well. But yeah, I usually spend a few weeks before turkey kind of looking around, trying to figure out where birds are hanging out. And bear season is kind of I joke around that bear hunting for me was like hunting Sasquatch, because I would go out and never see anything. I hunted bear for like 20 years and just finally got one. But so I can't really speak much about bear preparation. I'm not very good at it. But as far as deer goes, same idea. Like, even today I was out scouting for turkey, listening for birds. But after about 7:30, 8 o'clock, I started scouting deer. I was scouting deer the rest of the day.
I can relate to you completely. I've said this on my podcast a number of times. I'm a deer hunter, but I go bear hunting. So, like, I'm still in that transition with black bear. Like, I actually have put more thought and effort and emotion and everything else into bear hunting in the last probably 2 years than I ever have in my life for any other species besides white-tailed deer. It's just this weird phase, I guess, I'm going through. But yeah, like the time of year, like I'm thinking that most recent information is valuable. And same thing with turkeys. Like I'm just now starting to go into areas that have historically had birds or listening points and just trying to put pieces of the puzzle together to where I might be able to go hunting. And I have a unique, you know, with my job, I only have so much time for spring gobblers. So I try to make the most of what I do. And a lot of time, like I have a designated route on a 2-week period where I'm going for work. So each day I'm driving, you know, point A to point B and everything else. So if I know where I'm supposed to start my day on Tuesday, I try to figure out what pieces of land will I drive right past that I'm relatively close to that I can get a quick hour-long hunt in and then pack up and go to work. So, you know, that's what I'm doing the 2 weeks leading up to the season. I'm going to those places and, you know, doing a quick speed tour. Is there any scratches? Did I hear anything at first light? And then I'll go on my way.
That's kind of – I'm on the same boat. I work a 12-hour swing shift. So – I take off a couple days in turkey season, plus my normal schedule gives me a couple days off to actually hunt the whole day. But, a lot of times I'll be coming home from night shift at like 6 a.m. and I'll take the scenic route home and just check if any birds are gobbling anywhere, like in some of the more local spots. And, two or three different occasions I've, came home like in a frenzy because I heard a bird gobbling. Grab my gear, camo it up quick, and go back out, and I actually got the job done. I attempted it about another 24 other times, but the sad part is because it's often coming off night shift, you know, you go after a turkey and you end up shooting it if you're lucky, and then you find yourself, you know, celebrating and all excited about it, and before long you gotta be back to work and you didn't sleep at all. So it's exhausting, but you know, you kind of you know, when you're passionate about it, you just make time, you know.
Well, yeah, and I wrestle with that. So when you're in that rushing sense, does that taint the experience for you? Because like I try to throw hunts in wherever I can, but I guess it's maybe, I don't know, just the chapter within my life where I'm actually enjoying like taking off and the process more than I am like making sure I get to throw a quick hunt in, because it is a different experience.
I agree that it does seem like if you're in a rush or in a hurry to get something done, or you have plans that like after the hunt, it does seem to take away from it. And I joke with my buddies about it a couple of times in the last couple of years that the times that I have like a dentist appointment or have, you know, have to be at dinner with my wife, like dinner plans with my wife, that's when I shoot a deer or shoot, you know, something happens. So that gets frustrating, but, I mean, end of the day, I still want to get the job done. So I like will milk every hunt I can out of the season. But you're right. Like I value, you know, the days where I can just take it all in, not feel rushed. And just sometimes you're not even on birds or on deer or whatever. You're just kind of just enjoying nature, you know, enjoying being outside.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I wanted to kind of pick back up where we left. So for those listening, if you didn't listen to the episode we did a few weeks ago with Jason, we were talking about Maryland Sika deer hunting, and we talked about Jason's season that he had this past year, successful, and kind of the years leading into that. But we barely scratched the surface on your season last year because you had a pretty incredible hunting season in the fall, and we're hoping to continue that in. So, you know, I'm just going to let it at that, and I'm going to let you open up with how the gateway into fall 2023 went for you, because I think it was pretty cool.
Well, Maryland season starts in early September, so that's how I usually the last, you know, 5 or 6 years have started my season out, and I was fortunate enough, an area I killed a really good buck last year. I did some scouting in there, and I was pretty confident that I could find an early season buck. Just the sign was there, and I know a lot of guys aren't big on those morning hunts, you know, for a buck and in early season. But it was like the third or fourth day. It was within the first week. We had a little bit of a cold snap, and just temperatures were down maybe 15 degrees from where they were, and I went into an area and. I ended up having a pretty good buck come in. Now, he was really wacky racked. When I first saw him, I thought it was a half rack, just three on one side. And I kind of had my mindset I was going to pass him. But then and as he got closer, I was like, that's a big deer. And then when he was right at 30 yards, he turned just right. And I saw his the main beam on the left side was all funky. Like it had, I think it has like 6 or 7 points just in like a club on that one side. And I was like, I'm like a sucker for the freaky deer. Like I'm like, I'm shooting that thing. So I was fortunate enough. He actually picked me up when I was moving in position to get a shot on the right side of the tree, but he kind of, there was a button buck right underneath me feeding, and he kind of stared at me and would stare at that button buck, and it kind of calmed him down after a little bit, I believe, enough that I could get the bow drawn, and I got I think it was about a 30-yard shot, and it was perfect. You know, it was one of those, you know, textbook, you know, you saw it buried behind the shoulder, and, you know, heard him crash within, I didn't see him go down, but I heard him crash close. He went about 70, 80 yards, but that's how I started my season off.
Well, and let me ask you too, because you brought up a good point before we get rolling too, the morning thing. I do find that very interesting. And you know what? I've been guilty of that early season. A lot of places I won't hunt mornings for different reasons. And sometimes they're good reasons, but sometimes maybe I'm sticking my neck out. What I've noticed when I watch some of the YouTube videos that you and, you know, the rest of your group of buddies on Final Stand do, like, you're not afraid to hunt mornings in the early season. You want to touch on that a little bit?
I think like I touched on how like we had a cold snap. I mean, if it's your typical, like, you know, like a week straight of like 80 degree days or whatever, I mean, I'm not super confident going out those mornings. But if you see in the forecast like you got a cold front coming in, even with some rain, like some weather, now I won't hunt like pouring rain, but you know, like a light drizzle or something, you know, or just a change in that kind of that straight or that normal weather for that week or whatever. That in that case was like a cold front moved in. I felt pretty good about it. And the winds that I needed to hunt that stand also were forecasted for the, for that as well. And it was kind of weird. It was right on the kind of the backside of the front coming in. So it was still some east aspects to the wind. It was east, southeast. And I don't really have a bunch of east wind spots, honestly. Over the years, I found that like east wind spots usually come with like fronts and it's with the rainy side of the front. And I don't really have much success, like, or I don't really put a lot of time in on east wind spots. So anyway, I had a little bit of east wind and it would have worked for this tree I had eyed up, while scouting and kind of just the stars aligned that I was confident in it. But I think to bring it back around, you really got to have like, a change in the weather, a change in temperatures mainly is what it was. It dropped like 15, 20 degrees that day or that night before that hunt.
Gotcha. So you start the season off with a bang in the first week in Maryland and you didn't even start in Pennsylvania hunting. You get a buck under your belt in Maryland. Does that, when you start off that early, do you kind of go with the mindset of, man, whatever happens the rest of the season is a bonus and I'm satisfied? Or does that just make the juices get flowing even harder that you just get into like major hunt mode?
It's kind of a little of both. I touched on before how, I started hunting Maryland and I do try to get on deer in Maryland. I am excited about it. But really the end of the day, I grew up in Pennsylvania. So though I had killed that buck in Maryland, like I still had in my head, my drive was to get a PA buck. Like that's what I was thinking. And I was happy that I kind of, it took the edge off a little bit in Maryland, but the fire was still there for Pennsylvania. And, kind of leading up to, I do want to touch on leading up to Pennsylvania season this year, something I did different. The last couple years, I've gone to Colorado with some buddies for elk. That season falls like right around the end of October, early November. So it kind of cut into my rut hunts the last couple of years. And that coupled with, I have a really good friend I talked about, Jared Smeltzer. He killed a heck of a buck and he's been doing really well in the big woods of Northern PA the last couple of years, just finding good deer. And, we kind of did bounce ideas off each other. And I kind of made the goal this year. I was going to try to get a big woods buck. Like that's what my goal was. And while I was prepping for Maryland and getting that done in Maryland, I had a couple cell cams in the big woods, you know, kind of rolling and they were feeding me as they do. the intel that like there was a couple of really nice buck around in the big woods of PA where I wanted to go. So that had me kind of really excited as well.
Oh, and to be fair, not to let the cat out of the bag too much, but it ended up proving itself because you shot a dandy buck in Pennsylvania too. But was that later in Pennsylvania archery season that you killed that, or was that pretty much right after Maryland?
That was the first week of November I got that buck. I'm super confident. I don't put a lot of faith in trail cameras. I use them as a tool, but I don't like, it's not the end of the world if like, I don't see something on camera that I need to see per se. But what I was looking for is that a couple of good buck I was getting on camera in that area, they were all nighttime pictures. And I kind of made a note or whatever, or a goal of mine that I wasn't going to even go in those spots until I got a daytime picture of a good deer. So I was waiting for a good deer to show up on camera at daylight, and daylight basically. And I actually had plans to take my kids trick or treating, for Halloween. And as they were getting ready to go out, I think it was like 5:30 or whatever, 5 o'clock. my phone went off, and I looked, and there was a really solid buck, like a 130, 140 class buck, standing in front of my camera, in daylight. And I was like, it's time. So I, obviously trick-or-treated my kids, but I knew that within the next day or two, I had to head to the mountains, and I did that. And it was interesting. I hunted big woods a fair amount. I have pretty good experiences in the big woods, and I've done it enough to understand, but still, when you hunt the big woods, you got to accept that you're not going to see deer all the time, that some of your sits will be like very slow. And the first day I got to up in the big woods where I wanted to go, the spot I felt really good about, I had a good wind for it. I was so excited to sit this spot, and I basically got skunked. I didn't see anything. It was really windy. It was snowing. I got cold, and I'm just like, but in the back of my head, I'm thinking it's going to happen. It's going to happen here, at the end of the day. And nothing, I didn't see a single deer. And as I was lowering my bow out of the tree, a deer snorted like within 50 yards of my tree. And it was just like kind of insult to injury, basically. But, I kind of, used that intel that there was a deer and where it was coming from. I know it was a buck or a doe, but where it was coming from, and coupled with what I had seen scouting, and also the forecast the next day was a little different than that day. I made a shift. It was about a 700 yard shift to another section. The area I hunt, it's a mix of like hardwoods, swampy area, and some clear cuts. And I found that a lot of cases where I hunt the deer, you hear a lot about people talking about deer spending a lot of time in these clear cuts. Where I was at, I was seeing that the deer were spending most of the daytime it seemed like in the swamps. And then it would come out to the clear cuts, almost like a food source. And also like a destination, I think, where they would kind of congregate like in that time of year, like in the rut, look for doe, check for doe.
Did you see like the age of the cut had a major influence on that? Like was the age of the cut something that kind of influenced that in your mind?
There was, because I was fairly new to hunting clear cuts. I only really started the last couple of years. In my opinion, I didn't think there was any difference. But after talking to Jared, who has some experience with some of the cuts, the cut I was hunting was, I guess, fairly young, probably around 5 years old. And the soil up there isn't very good. So the regeneration isn't super great either. So where some areas where like a 5 year old cut is really starting to get a high stem count, and some decent woody mass type trees, all it was pretty much in this clear cut was blackberry bush, briars, different kind of just thorny type bushes and things. And then there was the trees that regenerate quicker, like birch and stuff like that, were starting to come in. But that's kind of where what it looked like to me. And there was some bedding I found scouting in there. And I actually, that was part of it, is that day I hunted and I didn't see any deer. I was set up thinking I was going to have deer in that cut all day. And I was like ready to cut them off as they traveled through the cut. It was kind of a section where some blowdowns had fell into the cut, and it corresponded with a kind of rocky outcropping within the cut. And it made like a pinch point. And I thought, this is a prime spot with this wind for a buck to pinch through here if he's cruising these cuts. But I didn't see anything. And so, like I said, that not seeing any deer in the cut, all day, with a good wind for the most part. I thought that I needed to get closer to these swamps. And when I made that shift 700 yards, the next morning, I saw a decent 2.5, 3.5 year old buck chasing a doe, and he went right into the swamp. Like, he went from the cut into the swamp, and I saw another doe in the hardwoods moving toward the swamp as well. And in my head, I was like, they're definitely going to that swamp. But I had to be on the other side of it. Like, the side I was on, I was not in the best position to get them when they came back, if they came back out toward the evening. So I had to make another shift midday. Well, I say midday, you know how in the early season, or in the, at that time of year, you get like frost on the everything, you know, in the morning, it's all frosty. And then right around 9, 10 o'clock, what happens a lot is that sun will melt that frost off and everything is wet for about an hour. And that you have that hour window there when things are wet that you can make moves quietly, as quiet as possible anyway. More quietly could in frosty leaves or dry leaves, you know, kind of thing. So I actually, I watched those deer do what they did, I was watching the frost on, below my stand. And when I started to see it get like that, go from like the whitish look to almost like a black, like it was getting a wet leaf look, I climbed down right away and I made a shift. The shift actually was 1,000 yards, but it put me at 600 yards to the other side of the swamp. And, that's where I ended up having that buck that I shot came out. And as I was trying to pick a tree, I jumped two doe fawns and I thought, did I screw things up? But they just kind of jumped up, didn't really know what I was and walked off. And in my head, I thought maybe those doe fawns were there because their mom was getting bred. And maybe a doe would come back looking for those fawns, or just other deer would come into that area later. It just kind of gave me some people maybe would have jumped those deer and lost confidence. I kind of looked at it as like, you know, maybe it's a good thing. So I found a tree that covered several heavy trails coming out of the swamp. And, there was some rubs coming out of the swamp as well. And I climbed up a tree and this buck, I heard footsteps. I think it was around 4:30, 5 o'clock coming out of the swamp. And I just caught antlers in the beech brush right on the edge. And he stepped out right kind of the transition into the cut. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is a heck of a buck. I don't know what he weighed. I don't know what he scored. It's a basically 11 point. It's a 10 point mainframe 10 point with a kicker off his 1G2, but it was a very big deer, for the mountains where I hunt, in body size, and it's raucous. It's probably, I don't know. I mean, you can, you're video chatting me, so you can see it over my shoulder, but it's probably in the 130s. It might be pushing 140. I don't know.
All right, everyone, it's that time of year where things are greening up and I'm starting to think about food plots. And if you're doing the same thing, look no farther than Vitalize Seed, specifically Nitro Boost spring and summer planting. It's the food plot that has the ability to fix atmospheric nitrogen and add diversity to your food plot mix. It's highly browse tolerant and adds a ton of benefit, not just to the wildlife, but for your soil. 30% more diversity than any other food plot you're going to find, and it's engineered for the proper carbon to nitrogen ratio to naturally feed your soil biology and set you up for a fall food plot like no other. Diversity is king for your wildlife and for your soil. Look no farther and check out Vitalize Seed. Radix Hunting was founded on premium grade trail cameras and continues striving to produce the best cellular and conventional trail cameras on the market today. The Gen 600 is a second generation camera from the Gen series line. With premium video and audio recording capabilities, this product has become well respected as the HD video trail camera. In addition to the Gen series cameras, their M-Core cellular camera has all the features of a quality cell camera at an affordable price. Along with their cameras, they offer stick and pick trail camera accessories to allow you to set your cameras just right. You can find it all at RadixHunting.com and be sure to follow Radix Hunting on Instagram and Facebook. Want to check out Radix cameras in person? Stop in at Little Mountain Outfitters in Richland, Pennsylvania and have a peek. Now, back to the show. It absolutely. So Jason's being as humble as he possibly can be. This is a stud buck. I'm looking, I mean, it's got that classic mountain buck look to it because it's got long beams, it's got really good mass, and he's got those typical shorter tines on his main beams. Like I can think of so many buck I've had trail camera pictures of, even some that we've killed at my camp in northern Pennsylvania with a very, very similar look to it. And that's a trophy deer. So as you're telling this story of hunting in the big woods, there's a million things that are going through my mind, because you had the goal, you wanted to shoot a buck in the big woods and stuff. I have a very similar goal. I want to kill a buck with my bow, a mature buck at camp or in the vicinity of where my camp is. I've never done that, and I'd like to do that. And I've hunted there for a number of years. So one of the things that you had discussed, you were making moves. And I'm curious, the area you were hunting, did you have a lot of history with this area and were very familiar with this area and how you wanted to navigate this property? And when I say a lot of history, do you know this property to the degree that when you were making a move from a morning sit to an evening sit? You know, I hear a lot of people have a lot of concern about where they walk with their ground scent in relation to setting up for that evening hunt. So as you were setting up, you were talking about walking into an area and kind of seeing some trails come together and just picking a tree. Walk me through your approach and where you were expecting deer to come or hoping deer would move through, and how the impact you had in that move had to, because I've seen two ends of the spectrum. I mean, you go into the hunting beast style where, goodness gracious, you take one step wrong and you ruin the hunt. And I've seen other people where they'll walk circles in the area trying to figure out the best tree, climb up the tree and shoot the deer. And I'm curious your perspective.
As to the history of the area, I had never hunted this area, the main part of this area, whatever, ever. The reason I looked at it was, I was in that area doing some fishing earlier, a year or two before, and I'd seen a pretty good rub, and it made me think I didn't want to check it out in the future. So last year in the spring scouting time frame, I found a lot of big sign. The main thing really stood out to me, I guess, is big tracks, like really big tracks. And that's, you know, rubs can be kind of subjective at times as far as like if it's a big deer or not. I mean, you know, big tall rubs usually are a big deer, but sometimes not. But, you know, big tracks don't really lie. So, and then while I did that scouting, I put a lot of faith in map scouting. Because I work shift work, maybe I'm at work on night shift a lot of times. I spend my breaks just going through, like, a long time ago, it was like Google Maps and like different Terra type maps or whatever. But now anymore, it's like Onyx or Spartan Forge. I use those maps and so I had maps out of these areas, and then as I was scouting, I mapped out every logging road I could in the cuts. I'd walk them and track them, and in the spring. So, and it's super beneficial, because when I wanted to make that move, it wasn't like, though I didn't know the area great as far as hunting, I knew where the deer were kind of going to or coming from, and I had my history on my maps to help me get to where I need to go as quiet and as efficiently as possible. You know, I basically dropped over to down the hill a little bit to a logging road that paralleled the swamp that the deer were hanging in, but it was about, I don't know, 200 yards from the edge of it. And it got me, I used that to kind of stay down the hill out of kind of line of sight, but also scent wise and stuff, and keep all my, everything I could away from there. But as I got to the area I thought I needed to be in, I said I jumped those two doe fawns. I jumped those doe fawns. I thought I was pretty confident where I wanted to be there, but I actually walked past a tree probably 80 yards. I was walking the transition line between the swamp and the clear cut and the open hardwoods. They actually made like a T. The swamp and then the clear cut teed into it, and then the other side of that leg of that T or whatever was the open hardwoods. So I was walking that transition line trying to see how they moved on it, and I walked past it because I thought I'd be back in the woods a little further. But as I got back in there, I saw that it was a lot of beech brush, and I really just, it was some sign, but I had no shooting at all, like none. So I pulled back out to that, and it ended up really, it really ended up being pretty much the hub of that T per se. You know, like think of a letter T, the top of the tee would have been the swamp, and then the tail coming down a river. One side was the clear cut, one side was the hardwoods, and that point right there is where I set up.
But that spot, would you have seen that on your maps? Like, would you have been able to? Did you see that after the fact? Like, oh, this is actually the intersection. Like, you didn't actually have that picked out like on your map beforehand.
I'd seen it. I cut through it, and when I was scouting the spring, from the map, it looked like it was just more of the clear cut. Like because the hardwoods there is fairly open, so it looked like just the way it was kind of growing up. It looked just part of the clear cut. But when you actually walk it, it's open hardwoods there, and it's not super big. It's probably about a 4 or 5 acre section of open hardwoods there. That transition line, that buck was coming out of that swamp, and he appeared to be heading right to walk the transition line between the clear cut and the hardwoods. And this was again back to your point about like hunting beast style and things like that. My scent was blowing, from the clear cut into the open hardwoods, but I was about 25 yards off the edge of the swamp. If that buck would have went another 10, 15 feet beyond where he did, where I shot him, he would have got my wind. So, you know, you hear a lot about guys, you know, kind of like threading the needle or just off winds kind of thing. I believe that buck was coming out of that swamp with the wind in his face, but his goal was to basically walk the transition edge of that clear cut with the scent coming out of the clear cut kind of to his broadside or whatever, so he could scent check it, you know, as he walked the edge of it. Is what it seemed like he was doing to me. And I see that a lot. Like that's one of my favorite things to hunt in the rut is like the downwind edge of a thicket, because I find that those thickets are a lot of times really nasty. Those bigger buck don't like really going through it. It uses a lot of energy. The racks get hung up. So they'll walk the downwind edge of it just inside or just outside it, depending on how that kind of that buffer is. But in this case, and I was, the buck came by it. He was 32 yards when I shot him.
Well, everything about that sounds like you couldn't have wrote it out any better on a textbook. Now, I'm curious, when you were going into that stand, going into that approach, tell me a little bit about, you know, from the morning hunt and the forecasted wind and stuff. So, like, I'm just playing this out in my head, like, if I'm in your shoes and I want to make the most of my hunt, I'm always thinking wind. I'm constantly thinking wind, paying attention to the wind, doing all those things. So, when you went into that area, did you just have a general sense that you thought the wind was going to be okay, so you went into it, and like walk me through what you remember in choosing that stand location relative to the wind? Because what did that exact scenario play into your head, or was there times where you were in the stand thinking, man, I am really cutting this close? Like what was that like?
Well, the morning hunt I was on the morning hunt I was north of the swamp and on the east edge of the clear cut, and the winds were out of the west, but the winds are supposed to shift as the day went on to more northwest. And the reason, as you recall, I said those deer were heading into that swamp. The swamp was south of me a little bit in the morning. If I would have just shifted down that transition line of that clear cut to the swamp and the winds rolled around to more northwest, my scent would have been blowing right into that swamp. So that my thought process was to pull back and kind of drop down the hill, and get, so that I was on the, I guess I'd be the, sorry, I'm trying to remember how it laid out. I was on the southeast side of the swamp, basically. So, my scent was, you know, the northwest wind was blowing kind of catching the edge of the swamp, blowing out of there into that open hardwoods. Mm-hmm. If I would have stayed on the side of the swamp I was originally on in the morning, I would have blew it out. So that's why I had to do that big loop around. It was a kind of a big J hook per se, around all of that. Now, there would have been a slight period of time as I was doing that move in the morning where my scent would have been blowing into the swamp. Now, I don't know if everybody has this luxury, but a lot of the places I hunt are places people hike. And there's a hiking trail not terribly far from where I was hunting. And a lot of times I think deer are just used to smelling people in those areas. So I sometimes use them, you know, to my advantage. I crossed my mind like that might be able to get away with it, but my main hope was just that a buck was sleeping or whatever when I walked by. Like, hopefully I get by him real quick. I didn't linger. You know, when I made that shift, it took about a half hour, and you know, I just kind of did that quick shift around there.
Yeah, a comparison I use for that all the time is, like, I think about even just in my backyard the way the deer behave. I have 2 black labs, and I have an electric in-ground fence that they know the border to. And I have watched deer in the woods behind my house when the dogs are in the yard, and they know their presence. But there's almost like this known, like, they don't go past this. I don't smell them past this. And they kind of accommodate that to there's not danger if they're outside of that. And I've seen that in hunting, too. Like, I get a kick out of some people who like to really talk down on folks who like to hunt suburban areas, like they're inferior or anything like that. When in reality, the deer are the deer, and yeah, the setting is completely different. But even if you are hunting a small woodlot, a deer knows the difference between human zone where they don't come into danger and something is within that fringe zone. So, like, to your point with walking, you know, on a walking trail and deer, like, yeah, deer don't like that, but if they don't ever have any trouble with people just walking on that trail and stuff, they do get used to that. That's something that they can eventually get used to.
Well, and I mean, think about it. If every time a deer smelled a person or a coyote or any kind of predator, they just avoided the area completely, they would never get around anywhere. I mean, short of like maybe like upper Canada, like northern Canada, where you don't, it's just wilderness to the extreme. Most places deer live, or in most places I hunt, there's a people aspect one way or another, be it other hunters, hikers, developments, housing, whatever you want to call it. I mean, even here at my house, I have a little bit of land in my house here I hunt. And I mean, it's wrong for me to hunt winds, south winds at my house here, if you would look at it from a perspective of like scent. But my house is right there. The deer smell my house. They smell my wife running the dryer. They smell my kids in the yard. So me sitting 80 yards off the back of my yard, if they get my wind, I mean, I don't think they're going to get too freaked out by that. They smell me all the other times. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, I could ask you so many more questions about the big woods and the whitetail, but there's more to this story, and I want to keep going with it. I don't want to steal your thunder here. So you kill a fantastic buck in Pennsylvania. What happened next? Was the bear next, or was the turkey next?
Well, so the next, about a week later, 5 days, a week later, whatever, we got some pretty heavy winds. And, I have some buddies that I do drives with in Maryland. And usually late season, we've always talked about, like, if we get really crappy, like, conditions to set a tree, we should maybe do a couple of light pushes in some of these thickets in Maryland where we hunt. Because, I mean, some of the stuff it just seems like the deer get into and never come out of. Mm. So we made a plan. We saw the forecast calling for high winds. Actually, it was 2 days straight of it. So we did 2 days of this, but we went to Maryland. It was in public areas down there. I think it was five of us. My little brother was with me, which is really cool. And, we did some pushes, and, the one push I got to sit on, sure enough, I had a buck come out with, three doe, and, he popped out, coming straight for me. And the order the deer were in was, it was a three doe and the buck. So they kind of got behind my tree coming toward me. I drew on the opposite side of the tree waiting for them to pop out. And I kind of was like counting deer as they went by, waiting for the fourth deer to settle a pin and make it happen. But at some point, one of those doe and that buck traded spots, and I almost let the buck get by me, because I looked at the fourth deer and I was like, that's a doe. And I looked forward, and the buck was the third deer. So they traded spots, and it almost screwed me up, but it was only about a 6 yard shot. And he wasn't standing. He was turning and at a kind of a fast walk, and a hard quartering shot, and I put it right, like, it went right through where you're supposed to put it. It was, the entry hole was just front of the hip on the back side, but it came out on the shoulder opposite side, and he only went about 80 yards. And he's like 115, 120 inch 10 point. But I mean, I don't even remember what I talked about before with Maryland. When I first started hanging in Maryland, my goal was like, if I could just find a solid buck down there. And also, when we do these pushes with our buddies, like, there is so much camaraderie. It is so fun. And also the effort we put in so much effort for each other to see each other succeed. But you don't want to be super selective. It just takes away from it. And you don't want to tell your buddies to just push through 500 yards of briars that you passed up a buck that you thought was a little smaller or something. You feel guilty about doing that.
Right.
But, This wasn't a bad buck at all by any means. So I was happy to shoot him. And my brother, who was with me when I killed the mountain buck in Pennsylvania, he walked with me up to the buck in Maryland when I picked it up. And he's like, "You freaking kidding me?" Like he just seen, you know, that buck the week before, and now I got this 10-point Maryland too. So that was, like I said, that was around like the 15th or something like that in Maryland. I don't remember the exact date, but it was the second, maybe early third week in Maryland, something like that.
So at this point in mid-November, you have three bucks down. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm not real familiar with Maryland tags, but you're tagged out at this point from antler deer, aren't you?
So in Maryland, you can get one buck in each season. So archery, rifle, and muzzleloader. And then you can pay for a bonus buck tag. It allows you to kill a second buck in any of the seasons. So I was tug out in archery season.
Gotcha.
I could kill a buck in rifle season or muzzleloader season in Maryland if I was lucky enough. But yeah, for archery wise, I was tug out. And also, I mean, remember from our previous podcast in early October, I killed a Sika stag. And then I, in gun season in mid-November, first day of gun season, I killed two Sika hinds. Mm-hmm. So all that was kind of piled in here too with this. So three whitetail buck, and a Sika stag and then Sika hinds before Thanksgiving was where I was at with things, I think, something like that.
tell me your emotions, your thoughts at that point, because that, did you ever have a season like that in your life before?
I jokingly set goals for myself, my one friend Mitch, who I work with, and we would like just make up like, and they're like usually like outlandish, like I'm going to do this, this, and this. And honestly, what I kind of joked about doing is what happened. So it did actually happen. And so he's like, "You got to be kidding me." Now, two or three years ago, when I went to Colorado the first time, I had killed a elk in Colorado, a mule deer in Colorado. I came back from that trip, killed a whitetail buck in PA right away in the rut. And then I think I killed a Sika stag that year, with my rifle. And I think I killed another Maryland buck with my bow. So that was a good year too. Oh, and I also killed a pronghorn, one of those years too. I don't know. I forget. But yeah, I had some good seasons in the past, but this was up to this point, this was going well. And, I told you earlier, like I always have tried to kill a bear, in Pennsylvania. It's been a goal of mine for years. I grew up going to the Poconos where my grandparents used to live. And I made it like a goal of mine. It was always in the back of my head that I didn't want to kill a bear on a drive. I don't have a problem with bear drives, but I'm not part of like a camp. I just would go up there on my own or with a couple of buddies here and there. So I wanted it to be like kind of like a classic hunt. And I wanted it to be, even though I went to like Potter County with some friends in the past, in bear season or whatever. It was always been in my head that I wanted to get my first bear where I grew up going, and I would like to do it like not on a drive. That was kind of my goal. Icing on the cake was I had my dad with me, you know, and in Pennsylvania, certain parts of Pennsylvania, you can kill a bear if you have a bear license the first week of rifle season, mm-hmm. certain units or certain zones. So that area you went to, you could kill, my dad had a buck tag. And I had a bear tag, and we joked going up like that'd be cool. We both tug out, or, you know, whatever. In my head, I thought I may be able to get my dad a shot at a buck today, but I'm not going to get a bear. Like the odds of that are pretty slim. But we got up into the area, went to the hunt in the morning, and my dad he didn't want to sit super late. He gets cold pretty quick. So I told him, I said, "Why don't you sit till like 9 o'clock?" And I'll do a slow, like, hook around, like a J hook around you through the thick mountain laurel, see if I can push any deer out to you. I did that, and he saw a spike and a doe. And then I said, "Let's go try a different area." We relocated into a different spot, sat there a little while, and I could tell, like, he was getting tired, and I kind of was like, "Eh, you know," like, I wasn't really feeling it much. So I said, by this time it was like pushing 1 o'clock in the afternoon, 12:30, 1 o'clock. And I said, "Let's just go check a third spot out real quick and just see how many people are in the parking lots, like in the public area, you know, where we're at. And if it's not pressure, there's not a lot of guys there, maybe we'll go in there and hunt a little bit before dark, you know what I mean?" And I said, if it's, you know, full of people, we'll just go home then. Like, we'll just call it a day. And, you know, he's like, that's cool. Yeah. Cause I was just happy to be out with my dad. Like it was a really casual hunting experience, really. Like, and, it was nice. And like sometimes, you know, you feel a lot of pressure. This hunt was just super laid back. But, as we were relocating on this dirt road, and you picture these really small, like just dirt roads that just kind of wind all around the big woods of Pennsylvania. I look over and I see a bear, like just 80, 90 yards off the road, like just parallel in the road in this like kind of open stuff, just on the edge of the laurel. And I was like, holy crap. And the road we were on, it was nowhere to pull off or anything. So I saw ahead, like 70 yards or so, a pull off. So I said, my dad was sleeping. My dad fell asleep while we were driving. I said, Dad, there's a big bear back here. And I pulled over and then I grabbed my gun and I started cutting into the laurel to get cut off the direction he was going. I was trying to get in front of him. And I got to about where I thought he'd be popping out at, and he wasn't there. And I was probably about, I don't know, 15, 20 yards from my dad. He was slowly following me. My dad was probably 20 yards off the road and out of the dirt road, and he could still see the truck. And I was just inside this mountain laurel, and I had to go a little further just to push out to the edge where you'd see like an open area on the edge of this beech thicket. And right before I stepped out into it, I caught movement, and here the bear was popping out right into this open area. And I mean, I literally leveled my sights on him, and he walked right into my crosshairs at like 60 yards. And I mean, I couldn't believe it. Like, it's the first time I ever put my sights on a bear, because I've been trying to do this for 20 years or whatever, like forever. And it was just comical because the way I saw them was like from a dirt road. I've hiked thousands of miles probably in these woods trying to find bear, you know, and you see sign, you occasionally hear shots and stuff, but I never really had much luck doing it. And so it just was funny that it's how it kind of came to be. But I shot the bear with also the clip I had. I have the worst luck with guns. I have two clips for my 308. One of them jams, the other doesn't. Well, when I grabbed in my haste, I grabbed the crappy clip. So I threw it in, I shot the bear, like the gun jammed then. So I got one shot, I'm fiddling with the gun. I couldn't get it. I didn't even see where the bear went because I was messing with my gun right away. I finally got it straightened out, and my dad got up to me and he said, I think I heard it hit him pretty hard. And I was like, I think I got him, but I don't know. So I was like, let me go back to the truck. I want to get my good clip and we'll go start tracking this bear. So I went back to the truck, got my clip, came back to my dad, and we got to where I thought he was standing where I shot. It was a couple kicked up leaves, no blood. And I was a little concerned that at that point. I could see kicked up leaves a little further, like heading into the thick stuff. And I walked toward it. And about the time I was starting to feel a little like, where's blood at? Like there's no sign. Like what's going on? I looked kind of off to my right at about 40, 50 yards. And I saw a black hump, in the open woods. And I was like, that's not natural. So I put my scope on it and checked it out. And it was definitely a bear, like him. And we eased toward him closer and closer, and he was dead. It just took one shot, but, he ended up being 444 pounds was his live weight. And we only had to drag him 250 maybe yards to the road. It took us, 3 hours.
It had, you know, to. Like, oh my gosh,
I helped my friend Mitch get a bear out, years ago that was around 120 pounds. And I remember how that was like, just seemed, it was very cumbersome. They don't drag like a whitetail. Nothing about him is easy. And, I remember like, just like little things, like when the bear's head fell against my hand in a tree, like it pinched my hand. It hurt. Like it was that heavy. You know what I mean? Like things like with a deer, you just kind of would push the head back out of the way. This was like a lot, you know, it was a big pain in the neck, but, I was pretty excited. So I shot this bear. And I had forgot to tell you too, in between the whitetail buck in PA and the bear in PA, I had taken my two friends up to the mountains to hopefully get on a whitetail buck. And I took my shotgun for a walk looking for grouse. And, I didn't see any grouse, but I ended up seeing a couple turkey heading toward this one area. So I went back to the truck, got my turkey gun, got in front of these turkey and got set up, and ended up coming in to 35 yards, and I shot the one gobbler. So that was, that was the in between there. So technically I got my triple crown then when I shot that bear, which was my first ever in PA too. That's been a goal of mine too, since I heard about that as like a teenager. And you know, I'm not trying to brag, but like I never have much trouble getting on turkey or a deer. Like I usually can find one somewhere and get opportunities, but the bear has always been like the Achilles heel for me. So it was nice to finally make that happen.
Well, that's most people too. I was curious too, because I knew that you shot a fall turkey, and I don't know a lot of people who actually specifically go fall turkey hunting. I know a lot of people like myself. I have fall turkey hunted, but it's been very minimal. I get so deer oriented, and that's all I think about, and I'm taking the bow till the end. I've worked a couple busted up flocks in my life. I remember as a kid, like my dad didn't archery hunt, still doesn't. But you know, every now and then he'd get the itch, he'd want to go fall turkey hunting, and I remember a couple instances with him. So would you have been fall turkey hunting if it hadn't been for the fact that you had shot the buck that you had done, or do you typically go fall turkey hunting?
I'm kind of the same way you are. Like if I'm fortunate enough to have tagged a buck, to tug out with a buck, and I'll do some fall turkey hunting. Now I will say that since I started hunting Maryland, and you know, that season goes on for all, you know, from September to basically being in February, anymore, I usually just go right from PA then, if I would kill a buck, to Maryland and keep on rolling like through the rut or whatever. But, over the years, there's been a few times where a lot of times, like this year, it was the same way, where I have friends who have buck tags, and a lot of times, like the guys I hunt with, again, like there's a lot of camaraderie there, which I hunt with, it's kind of one of my greatest joys. Like it makes that much more fun. My dad, my brother, and like, you know, a core group of friends. It just, and when one of us kills a buck, then it, our gears shift right away to helping our other buddies get a buck. So, I had pictured some other big deer in the mountains, where I was hunting and where I shot that buck I shot, other deer that were on camera. So I brought two friends, my friend Mitch and my friend Zach, and I basically sat them at different other spots I had around those areas in hopes they would get a shot at one of those buck. And because I had taken them there and I was in the mountains, like I wasn't going to just hang out. I thought about filming them. But I didn't want to do anything to screw their hunt up. You know what I mean? Cause like you said, with scent and noise, we talked about that the last time, you know, with cameras and all that, I didn't want to mess their hunts up. So I just went fall turkey hunting basically. Well, grouse hunting and fall turkey hunting. But even to your point earlier about, you know, I was really out scouting deer.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, I was looking for, just other spots for this year now, you know, and it never stops really.
The few times that I've actually taken a gun for a walk in the fall, with the mindset, like quote unquote, I'm turkey hunting or something, I'm doing something for deer. Like I'm going out to check an area out to see, you know, how does this look for rifle season, or maybe or on the secondary, it's bear. Is there any bear sign in this area? I'm going to do a loop in this on this ridge and see if there's any bear sign, that kind of thing. I was going to do it this past fall because I had filled a tag in October, and I'd gone to camp with my dad and my uncle. And I had it all planned out that Saturday I was going to go up in the state forest to some of the areas that we hunt in deer season and check some areas out. Maybe I was going to fine-tune a couple drives, maybe add a few drives in that rifle hunt that we like to do. And it turns out I show up to camp, and my uncle shot a bear that night, and we were all excited, and he didn't go look for it because he wasn't sure about the hit. So then Saturday, spent the day finding the bear, recovering it, taking it to the check station, and that was every bit as fun. To your point about the camaraderie and helping each other, I didn't want to miss that for the world. That was fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Better than any turkey walk I would have done or scouting.
Exactly, yeah. A few years ago, it was probably 7 or 8 years ago now, but my friend Mitch, who I talked about, I had shot a buck in PA the first week of November, and he had it cameras in the mountains, kind of the same general area, where I got the bear, roughly the same area, had cameras and had pictures of some nice buck. So he was not sure where to go that one day. He wanted to go hunting, and I talked him into going to the mountains. And even though he had sat that spot three other times so far that year and had not seen a deer, I talked him into going, and he went and sat that spot, and he shot his best buck to date. It's like pushing 130-inch 8-point, just a real, like you talked about, the real heavy, just cool-looking mountain buck. But I had taken my turkey gun that day just for that same idea, because he was hunting deer, and I took a turkey gun. And I helped him get his buck out of the woods, and I had seen turkey scratching that I was trying to locate the birds when he texted me that he shot this buck. So after he shot it, I said, can you just hang out here with my truck? I want to see if I could find if these turkeys are actually in the area. And he ended up parking my truck right next to a construction crew. And these guys were checking out his buck the whole time. And I walked into the woods, and I ended up found this fresh sign, turkey sign. And I didn't have much experience with birds gobbling much in the spring or in the fall. Mm-hmm. I yelped a few times, and I got a turkey to yelp in a distance. And, this was, you know, in fall turkey. So I think I did like a kiki call and then a yelp, and my turkey yelped back to me. And I just started cutting real hard, like, and fighting purrs, and these birds lit up. They were gobbling like crazy, and ended up being seven gobblers came running in a line, all longbeards. Like, I was like, this is crazy. And all seven longbeards came to 30 yards, and they were like fighting with each other. Like, I had to wait to separate, get one separated to shoot, but I shot this longbeard, and I carried it out of the woods, and this construction crew was just got done saying how great it was. He shot this buck, and here I come carrying this turkey out of the woods. We look like a bunch of pros. It was great. Like, and we joked about being able to go home by lunchtime, and it was darn near lunchtime that we were driving home with a filled turkey tag and a filled buck tag. That was one of my favorite hunts that like days ever. And I didn't even kill a buck that day. It was just, you know, with a friend and out doing what we do.
Yeah, that's a dream. Fall turkeys, I mean, the more we're talking about this, I've had a few instances, and they're all like funny ones, like birds gobbling, and you know, sometimes they'll behave that way, and you can strike them up. Obviously, you had that experience. One of the funniest ones I remember, I went up to my buddy's cabin. I'd killed the buck like real early in archery season, and I was going up to archery bear hunt in November, and I'm going out to a spot and get out, and I'm walking into a spot, and there's a flock of turkeys, and it was a bunch of you know, hens and jennies, little ones, and you know, they're like the most fun to break up in the fall because they're so vocal. I mean, they are just like, if you break a flock like that up, they are just, they don't shut up. And these jennies and these jakes are just carrying on. And I'm thinking as I'm walking in, you know, I have a climber on my back and my backpack, which, you know, again, taking way too much stuff in the woods. And I didn't have a gun with me. All I had was my bow. And I thought, well, that's no big deal. I'd still like to shoot one with the bow. So set up in this laurel bush, right? And I had birds all around me, mostly in front, but I had a couple I could hear to my sides. And, of course, the laurel bush I set up in, I couldn't really shoot to the right. I had these windows open front. So I start going into my backpack. I can't even find a turkey call. So I'm naturally the clucking with my mouth and just kikiing, whistling, like, and just doing that. And
yeah,
I called. Two of them came running in 10 yards, and I'm at full draw, and I can't move. They're to my side. They see me take off. So then I call a little bit more, and all of a sudden I hear one like yelping. I thought, that's the lead hen. And sure enough, she comes out, and I get a range at this spot. It's like 35 yards. I thought, that's a far shot for a turkey, but I can make it. I got all dialed in. She comes out in this open. I draw back, and little did I know, my peep sight is split 50-50 in your bowstring. And yep. Little did I know, at some point in the day, something cut my string right where one of the sides of my peep sight were. So I had a strand missing. When I drew back, all I could see was the side of my peep sight. And it literally had just happened at some point that day. So I tried to do the old, well, I try to compensate. I missed, lost the arrow. It was like, that was stupid.
Yeah. You got to do what you got to do sometimes.
I guess. And it was excitement because hindsight's 20/20. Is like, what are the chances I'm actually going to put a lethal killing shot on a turkey that's 35 yards and my peep sight's out? In all reality, it was really stupid, but you get excited. Yeah. And sometimes I'm just glad I missed it. But man,
right. Every story we told right there, almost everyone, we were all like, I filled a buck tag. Now we did this. Like,
yeah.
It's obvious, like, that's kind of like me, your priority is like your PA buck, you know, in most cases. And that's back to the point we had originally that just like end of the day, we're deer hunters and the rest is kind of a la carte, you know, on top, on the side.
It is. And I have a couple buddies I got to ask this because as we're talking about this, I've never thought of this question like this. We've had the conversation a lot with friends and people on the show. Like, what do you like more, spring gobbler hunting or deer hunting? And guys will go back and forth and they never give you a good answer. But I like my one buddy, it's just ringing true every year. I mean, he's a damn good deer hunter, but every year he's like, I just love turkey and I love turkey hunting. So let's ask the question this way. If the hunt experience you got from spring turkey, if we moved that in the fall, the spring gobbler hunting was the fall and it overlapped with deer season, would spring turkey hunting have any more weight towards deer hunting for you?
I probably would never kill a turkey then. Because, I mean, unless we got to we talked about before, I filled a buck tag, then I would go spring, then I would go turkey hunting. But I'm glad that spring turkeys breed, they do their thing in the spring because, you know, that it's obviously nothing else going on then. I mean, if there was spring bear season in Pennsylvania, maybe we'd have to see which one I like better, you know. But I do like spring turkey. I'm a self-taught turkey hunter. My dad never turkey hunted much, never turkey hunted anyway when I was a kid. I had some friends that did it in high school, and when I got around 18 or 19, I decided I wanted to turkey hunt. I wanted to try to kill turkey. And then kind of, I talked about it last time I talked to you, but when I got like a full-time job and like started getting time off, that's when I had time to dedicate to turkey hunting. And I killed my first bird in 2002, but I've killed a turkey in spring every year since then, since 2002. And I think they, you know, the last several years two gobblers. And then also I started hunting Maryland, like I said, like 6 years ago or whatever. So I killed a handful down there. But I think I'm at like something like 47 turkeys now that I killed. So, I mean, I'm doing pretty good for self-taught. But it's every year, like, and it happened to deer season too. Every year I find myself, like, such rookie mistakes I make. Like, just stupid stuff. Like, wrong when turkey moving at the wrong time, you know, like thinking – the bird moved off and you stand up to reposition and then you see a, you know, a head, just red head, just bob into the woods running away, you know, or deer season, same thing. I feel like I make rookie mistakes, and that's why I love hunting, because you never really truly have it figured out. You're always learning. You're always trying to be better. And there's always like, something you take away from the previous season to like improve on for next year. Yeah, you're always developing and evolving.
For me, every time it's like missing basic principles, like you overlook basics, you try to get one edge or, you know, one step above when I make a mistake. That's what always happens to me. And another thing I've learned too is, like, I think about some of the hunts where I was absolutely just jacked up beyond belief. I was so excited, so super confident. That's when I made the most mistakes, because I was overlooking simple things, like I think about even this this year when I went to Jersey bear hunting. I mean, I was so jacked up that first day, and I overlooked a simple thing like, the wind didn't switch mid-morning. Why did, you know, it was forecasted to do this and it didn't. I should make an adjustment and didn't. Just that's the first thing that came to my mind. But there's so many times where I've noticed that, where I get so excited and then mess something simple up.
Yep. And it's kind of like, it's all in the details, you know, and a lot of times it's the little stuff that gets you. And I'm not speaking from a higher like pedestal. I do it all the time too.
Oh yeah.
And it's just kind of like, you got to try it. You try to keep those things in check, because they're like the basic principles, like, you know, the wind and scent, you know, and, you know, moving at the wrong time, that kind of stuff. But And that's the stuff that gets you a lot of times. It's not the big stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Well, closing this season out, we've got spring gobbler, which we're rapidly approaching. I'm sure if you've got your Maryland license, you'll probably head to Maryland at some point too. But I know you're itching for a PA gobbler this year too. What's in the works for this spring season leading into Grand Slam to be?
So I do plan to hunt. Maryland season comes in a few days. Thursday it comes in. I got to work the first day. I am off a little bit the second week, so I'm gonna do some hunting in Maryland, obviously, and I've had success in Maryland pretty regularly the last few years, so I hope to at least get on some birds down there and make something happen. But you're right, my main focus is Pennsylvania. I've been trying to find birds locally near my house here, but ever since like the economic turndown and stuff in like 2008 or whatever it was, like people just stopped going to the mountains and they all stayed home like for a season or two around then. And I noticed that when I started turkey hunting around like in 2002, I had no pressure locally here on local turkeys. I had it almost to myself. Anymore, it just gets hammered and the birds get educated really fast and there's not that many around actually. It's pretty slim pickings. So I hope to go to the northern part of Pennsylvania. I have more confidence up there. I personally don't like the idea of having to like fight with other hunters. Like when a bird's gobbling, I want it to just kind of be me and the turkey, not have a bunch of other stuff on the side. Yeah. But the areas I do go in the mountains, the last few years have been really slow as well. I was up there a few days ago and I only heard one gobble. It was a pretty good condition. I thought I would have heard multiple birds. I only heard one gobble. So my goal actually this year is the one place I go in Western Maryland has been pretty good to me. Just north of there, probably, I don't think it's like 30 miles or so in Pennsylvania, there's a lot of big public areas. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to Western Maryland one of the days here in a week or two and, hunt the morning and then drive north into PA and just scout some stuff in Western Pennsylvania and see what that's like. I think it's like Bedford County area, but I may be wrong in the county. It's that general area though. And, I just want to see if it's promising. I'm not afraid to go somewhere different. If that's where there's birds and I feel like I'm going to have some room to kind of roam. I don't like a lot of, like property lines. I'd rather, have like big woods where I can cover some ground and also pressure. So if I can get away from people and find some birds, I'll go Western PA. Either way, I'm going to be out. My goal is to try to get a PA bird. I have two tags. You can get a second gobbler tag. I do have two tags, but even the years I've killed two gobblers, I never try to kill two birds in the same area. My personal feeling is I honestly wish Pennsylvania would kind of regionalize that. Like you can kill one bird in one region, one in another, because there's guys who just kind of really hammer certain areas and they have multiple tags. It can really knock that population back, in my opinion. But, I would like to try to get one with a bow in PA, and I may try that with my second tag, if I'm fortunate enough to fill. But because of my situation with the buck, the fall turkey, the bear, I'm going to be taking my gun out initially anyway to try to fill that first tag. So I'm excited about it. What about you? What's your plans?
Man, I talked to you a little bit. I'm for the very first time planning to hunt Maryland this year, so I'm anxious to see that. So I told you before, and I've said this a million times, I'm a broken record, but it becomes real hard for me to take a lot of time in the spring because of my job. But I do have it slated to go to Maryland for probably 3 days, and then opening day, back again to goal setting. It's more of like dream in my mind than goal, and the reason I say that is because I feel like when you have a goal, you're taking steps to reach a goal, right? Like your mountain buck that you killed in northern Pennsylvania, you had that goal and you did a lot of preparation and stuff to do that, right? And I say this is more of a dream. I want to kill a bird up at my camp. I have done zero anything this year to prepare for that. So I'm going to camp to turkey hunt. It will be, lightning strikes and I find, a bird that's dumb enough to die and I run into it. That's going to be my turkey hunt there. But regardless of that, I just want to go to camp. I just want to go, like you said, turkey hunt, but I know, Lord knows, I'm going to end up in some areas with my eyes to the ground looking at things from a deer hunter's perspective. That's really what I want to do. So that's my goal. I can't believe I'm saying this. I've really been thinking that I'm going to do, you know, a couple hunts early and then scale back and, you know, try to put my nose down on the grindstone, get some house projects done and do this. And that, I'm actually getting a bad taste in my mouth right now as I say that out loud, thinking about that turkey. But it's true. Like, it's been a wild, hectic 2024 so far, what we've had. And I'd really like to knock some stuff out around my house because I definitely don't want to deal with that in the fall.
No, honestly, I had a discussion with my friend Jared about this. Like, I know, like, there's a lot of hype anymore about guys you see on, like, YouTube and stuff that just, like, spend whole seasons hunting. And it is very appealing. Like, it looks cool. But at the end of the day, like, I have a wife, kids, a job, you the same thing. We have obligations that, you know, a lot of times supersede hunting. And we just, to me, like, the best hunters I know have found that balance. And it's not always, and it doesn't always involve hunting. It doesn't. It involves mowing your lawn or taking your wife out to dinner, you know, or whatever. But you have to give and get kind of thing, you know. And we talked about deer hunting is our main passion. You and I both know that getting this honey-do list done in the spring and the summer equate to maybe an extra day or two of less pushback from our spouses in the fall, you know. And that's kind of how I look at it too. Like, or like my kids play soccer in the spring. I probably, though I would like to do some spring turkey hunts in on a Saturday, I may not do many this year because my kids are playing soccer. And I mean, it kind of sucks because my dad likes to hunt only on Saturdays. So I'll have to kind of, you know, juggle that. But I just feel like it's the best hunters I know have found a balance to be family men, you know, spiritual, whatever, you know, faithful guys, and also just but then they're good hunters too. They have a good balance. And I totally understand where you're coming from, and I appreciate that. Like, to me, that makes a good, not just a good hunter, but a good man.
Oh, well, thank you, but it definitely doesn't feel that way sometimes. You know, I was talking about it with a buddy of mine, and I was going through a point where I was just really struggling. Like, everything I did just seemed like it was just weighing on me and pressing. And it wasn't like it was overly hard things. It was just everything just seemed mundane and difficult. And I'm, of course, that, what's the first thing that comes to your mind when you go through something that's a little bit rough, right? You think about the easy stuff. And the easy stuff for me is hunting. And I was talking to a buddy about it, and he's like, you know, there's a reason it's called hunting season. He said, you know, he goes, you're in an environment right now where you're coming up with hunting content, and you're doing it on a year-round basis, and you're also consumed by other hunting content, and you're you know, impacted. And, you know, we are also content consumers, whether that's, you know, Final Stand YouTube channel that's putting stuff out right now as we speak, or anything for that matter. And, you know, it can easily blur your mind to the reality that hunting is a season. And even though, you know, the other thing he said too, which I completely loved, he said, you know why they came up with shed hunting? He said, because they didn't have anything else to come up with content. And I chuckled at that, because there's people that love shed hunting, and that's been a thing before it was cool on the internet, right?
Yeah.
But in all reality, there's a little bit of truth to that statement. And the balance has been hard for me. I think it's hard for everybody, and it's a constant battle. And I think maybe I've been a little bit overbearing on that very topic with my show, but I do that because I feel like I'm bouncing it out with all the other content, because I think it's very important. You know, you're a family man, I'm a family man. The majority of the people that listen to these podcasts are blue-collar, hardworking guys that love their hunting season and struggle with this too. And I think it's important we talk about it.
I joked with some people before. I'd kind of like to see a podcast one time of just hunter wives, like, talk, like, I don't know how it would go, but just talking about how they deal with us when we're in our zones, because they have their own setups or like methods they do to get through while we are, you know, out in the woods, you know, and maybe it would just be the wives, but the husband and wives collectively together. But I think it'd be an interesting podcast to just hear how the people that are, we just talked about being successful in a balanced life. Those people, how they act, and it would probably be really good advice for like younger people, because you know, going into relationships or whatever their own or jobs or whatever it may be, like they have to also come to a balance, you know, and maybe that'd be good information for them.
It was funny you say that, because I had that exact conversation with a friend of mine, and I was contemplating doing that exact thing. And it started out by I asked my wife, I said, "How about you go on the podcast? You know, do something like that and talk family." And she goes, "Fat chance."
Yeah. I don't know. My wife really like it either, but I just kind of a organic idea there, you know, it came off the cuff.
It is. And I keep thinking back to what the heck would you name it and who would listen to it?
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. That'd be the one that people would skip maybe. I don't know. Maybe, but it also might, I mean, everybody's trying to find a new topic to cover. You know, that's probably something never really talked about.
Right. And it doesn't matter if a lot of people skip it, if it means something to a few people that do listen to it. So I think that's good. But
that's right.
Man, it's amazing how you do these podcasts and you start talking hunting. It doesn't take long for over an hour to just get eaten up. So, Jason, I, again, really appreciate your time. Appreciate your experience, your knowledge, your stories. I love the stories. We're going to keep doing it. You know, maybe we can do something post turkey season and, you know, get your 50th turkey this year, maybe.
Yeah, we'll try.
So, hey, well, anything you want to leave us with before we get out of here?
No, good luck to everybody this spring. Be safe out there. And also, you know, the guys I hunt with on Final Stand, we're going to be doing a lot of turkey hunting. I think Tim's going to Kansas this week or next week. I'm doing Western Maryland, a hunt or two anyway, and then all of us will be in Pennsylvania. So hopefully we can bring you guys some stuff you'd like to see, you know, some good content there. But again, just, you know, turkey hunting can get kind of sketchy, you know, calling like a turkey in the woods and guys with their guns out. But just be safe out there. Identify your target. Have a good time.
Yeah, don't let the excitement get you, and don't do stupid stuff.
Exactly, but it's always a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for getting a hold of me. I always love doing this.
You betcha. Hey, take care, buddy.
Thank you.